Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan and Jorgen.
Hello, gentlemen.
The Not a Thing podcast up and running for episode 223. It's so high of a number. I was just at a thing recently. Brendan, you were there, and someone asked us about the podcast, and we're like, we've done 223 of these things.
And here we are almost 6 years in, and we still don't have a great explanation of what our podcast is.
No, people ask me that too, and I'm like, well, it's about things that are things and not things, and that we care about. We talk.
Yeah. I think, you know, I don't know how much we have to work on the elevator pitch.
We're not selling it.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely don't have sponsorships yet, so... We're still working on that. If you would like to be a sponsor of the Not a Thing podcast, please do let us know. Hashtag Moontent. There's one we haven't brought back in a little while.
Not even I know what that's about.
please listen back to insert episode here about the moon tent and why that is our sponsorship plug of choice. But in any case, we are going to start off this episode not by going to the moon, but by going back to Earth, sort of. We've been tracking for quite a while the adventures of the latter day Tony Stark, Elon Musk, and his amazing trials with SpaceX. You've probably already seen the ridiculousness that was the Falcon Heavy demo launch, specifically the simultaneous booster landings. That part was ridiculous. I'm pretty sure everyone on the podcast, that is Jorgen and Brendan and I, watched that live.
Out of this world.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy.
And back in a tandem landing.
Two out of three, not bad.
Yeah. The third, the central booster core apparently ran out of fuel on the way down and then could not slow down nor course correct, and so did not land on the drone ship. I'm glad it didn't hit the drone ship, and then, like, you know.
I believe there was damage to the drone ship.
Oh, okay.
Because it hit the water at 300 miles an hour and blew up. And according to the press conference afterwards, Elon Musk said that if the cameras weren't blown up, they will release the footage. But they weren't sure yet.
Yeah, they've been really good about the footage that they do release. They have a video that was how not to land an orbital booster that they released after they landed the first drone ship one, I think. And it's just all of their like crashes and then explosions on launch and stuff like that. And it's fun to watch. Maybe we'll link it if we have time and space. But in any case, you know, it's interesting. From a, like, SpaceX is doing kind of big things point of view, it's not quite interesting from a people going into space point of view, because from what I've read, the Falcon Heavy is not going to have the Dragon crew module that's going to be attached. That's going to be only the regular Falcon 9, and so the Falcon Heavy is made specifically to launch, like, real big things like satellites into space, into very high orbits. Or cars. Apparently it launches cars into space really well.
Nice.
But the hope for people into space is still riding on the BFR. The big Falcon rocket, as they say.
Yes, Falcon.
Sure. As I'm sure it's called.
F stands for Falcon, yeah. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure. But yeah, I'm looking forward to every time they're gonna launch that. I really do look forward to every launch that they will show the landing footage for, because it is so strange to see. Like it really does come out of science fiction, landing rockets, and then he does it. Like, not every time, but in pretty spectacular fashion. So still fun to watch. Still a thing. We're gonna keep watching for it. Especially because I think the next launch they're doing, they're not going to land. They're launching it out of Vandenberg Air Force Base, so from California this time. But this one is going to have two of the prototype satellites for I forget what they're calling it, but the internet constellation that they're making, as in constellation of satellites, like enough satellites to give everyone like a gigabit of internet in the world. That's going to be crazy. They're launching the first two prototypes. I think it's the end of this week, whatever launch day that is, along with some other satellite for some paying customer, whatever. Should be interesting. Definitely a thing. And then kind of throwing back to another topic in a slightly different way. We've talked about Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies on the show before. When we came back from our hiatus and had Jürgen join us, we talked about Bitcoin kind of extensively again. We're going to bring it back one more time, maybe not the last time, but definitely because something that's been in the news a lot recently, which is not the Bitcoins themselves, but the Bitcoin mining that generates the cryptocurrencies, all the cryptocurrencies, the major ones, so Bitcoin and Ethereum, they have what's called a proof of work algorithm for generating more coins. So as the Bitcoin kind of ledger grows, the way they make slots for the transactions is that they have computers solving these complex math problems, and then as it solves the math problem, it creates this container that can be validated, but it is very hard to generate because it has to have all this computation. One of the major complaints that we talked about in the last show about where we talked about Bitcoin specifically was how power hungry it is, because when you're mining these things, you're essentially throwing up permutations of a problem, and for all the ones that are right, there are many, 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 many more that are wrong, and so that's all wasted energy, and it's something on the order of I forget what the stat was. It's like a gallon of gas per Bitcoin or some amazing number like that. So you're using a fair amount of power in order to deal with transactions on the internet. And so what some folks have done is they've taken to mine these in order to make their own coins. And for a while, it was the kind of thing where you had to buy specialized hardware, and now it seems that the specialized hardware that is most popular to use for Bitcoin mining, not specifically Bitcoins, but other cryptocurrencies, is GPUs. So that's why if you've been trying to build a video game machine anytime recently, GPU prices have gone through the roof. It's something like, it's like a 50 to 100% premium on some cards, like the GeForce 1060, it's supposed to be like a $200 card, and ends up being like a $400 card, and things like that. And the graphics card manufacturers are even coming out and saying, you know, it really should be not a thing to use these. The head of NVIDIA came out at a conference and said that it's our cards are for gamers first, and you know, shouldn't necessarily be used for other purposes, which I think is noble to say, but almost impossible to enforce. So I don't know how that's going. In addition to this, making this more kind of annoying to the average person, even if you're not someone who's going to mine coins, or if you're not someone that's buying, you know, high-end graphics cards to play video games or do software rendering or anything like that, it now is at the point where there are companies that are mining based on JavaScript cycles. So someone could insert code into a web page that would be used to use CPU cycles in order to mine for bitcoins. This can be applied to any computer. So what some websites have done is they have in the background like a pop under ad that would normally be an ad, but instead of being an ad, it's JavaScript code that is executing on your machine, thus stealing your CPU cycles to create cryptocurrencies. I think for a while, the torrent website, the Pirate Bay, was considering that as a way to keep their website afloat. Ha ha, Pirate Bay. anyway, sorry. A couple of you left. That's fine. Thank you very much. But
there's only two of us here.
And neither of you left, so it's fine. Like I said, it's fine.
That was a sensible chuckle.
But a number of websites are doing this unknowingly. There was something like 4,000 websites that were compromised over the last month, or discovered to be compromised by JavaScript ad code. It was built into the website's ads, which everyone gets served. And so everyone that visited those sites, those 4,000 sites, had some amount of their CPU, you know, cycles burned for mining bitcoins. And this is something that really affects everybody because it's on the internet, and that's nuts. So
it was especially big in England, where the websites for the National Health Service,
yep,
and the student loans were both compromised.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, the really interesting thing is, this wasn't like, it's not like those companies or those, you know, those national institutions were putting those ads on JavaScript code was. Those websites were hacked and turned into things that would distribute those that mining code. The thing that I had read was it could have been significantly worse, in that that all they were doing was mining for bitcoins and not doing some kind of cross-site execution thing where they're trying to, you know, steal your information. They're only stealing your CPU cycles. So I guess, yay? I don't know. I'm not sure. All I know is the craze of mining will hopefully go away. There are two improvements to the, or two changes rather. We don't know if they're improving anything or not, but two changes coming to the major Bitcoin and cryptocurrency kind of systems. The one for Bitcoin that's coming out is the Lightning Network, which will reduce the number of transactions that actually hit the blockchain. So if there's a if we're changing Bitcoins between each other, if both of us are essentially on the network at the same time, that doesn't actually have to go to the blockchain to do it, which means not every transaction has to be verified, which means not every transaction needs a spot in the blockchain. So in theory, it should reduce the pressure on the Bitcoin mining industry as a whole. And then Ethereum, which is a different kind of algorithm, they're moving to proof of stake rather than proof of work, which is an interesting technology. And we'll link both of these in the show notes, which you can always get at notathingpodcast.com, including some definitions about what those things mean. But in short, making it so you can't just mine a block by throwing some computing power at it. You have to actually own some amount of that currency. Because currently, you can mine for Bitcoin or Ethereum or any of these other cryptocurrencies without owning any. So you essentially just are generating value out of nothing. In proof of stake, the blocks are going to be generated anyway. And so what they do is they assign them based on how much, or they assign the power of them, or how much mining power you have based on how much coin you have, how much of that stake that you have, in which case it creates more of a more egalitarian way of dealing with things, because it's also harder to take over the blockchain, because you actually would have to have 51% of all the coins, not just 51% of the mining power. It's a little subtle, but in theory, it will reduce the pressure on the mining industry as a whole, which will reduce prices for GPUs. And then hopefully, really, the big one that I think is more interesting is it'll reduce the amount of wasted energy that goes into working with cryptocurrencies, because there is a fair amount of that as we're going. And so hopefully that goes a little ways towards legitimizing cryptocurrencies, because I think we've decided it's still a thing, except for the fact that the value of the coins can swing something like 100% in a year. That still has to be worked out, but in any case, cryptocurrency is still a thing. Cryptocurrencies potentially being mined on your computer, not a thing. The upside, or the one saving grace for those, for regular folks, is that if you're one of those kinds of people that runs an ad blocking thing like uBlock Origin or even just regular old AdBlock, both of those do have plugins specifically for blocking cryptocoin mining or browser hijacking. So that's a good thing, hopefully. It's sad that that occurs, but, you know, such is the internet sometimes.
Wait, someone could take a good thing and use it for nefarious purposes on the internet?
I feel like that's the that can almost be the theme of our podcast.
Taking things that aren't, that are things, and turning them into not things.
Well, maybe we should subvert that and start it with something that isn't a thing. So I think that fits well with your show topic, Brandon.
Yeah, what I was taking a look at this week, no pun intended, is in China they are using smart glasses with the police. So China already is the world's largest surveillance state. They have hundreds of millions of CCTV cameras throughout the country. And now they have glasses like in Mission Impossible, where police in train stations can use these to identify everyone using AI facial recognition to find out who they actually are, so they can capture fugitives and see people using fake IDs and pretty much just be really creepy in general. having glasses linked back to the central police database. I think it's complicated. I think, yes, you want to catch people that are breaking the law. I understand that. But when you're in a country where things that aren't necessarily, or I don't know, shouldn't be against the law are against the law, that seems dicey. I'd be interested to see if that technology makes it over here to the United States and see how that would be used, or whether the, you know, Constitution would be strong enough to prevent that from happening.
I think the Constitution is, whether our current people in power in the various forms of branches of government are willing to kind of put aside that Constitution is something else. But I didn't mean to go that way. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Good work, Alan.
All right. But I think it's interesting. It sounds very similar to Google Glass, in that it's kind of an augmented reality kind of thing. You're looking at your subject. That's not putting a screen in front of your face. It's a screen in which you're looking through and then giving you extra information. And I know when we talked about Google Glass on the show, I know it's been quite a while since we talked about that, but I remember it being very quickly decided that was not a thing because of the kind of creepy nature of it. And so I think it's funny that let's take something, you know, Google's motto for a while was don't be evil. So let's take something that's creepy and potentially evil and then turn it into a tool in a country that can, you know, be somewhat creepy and evil for
yes,
at least to its own people. And probably make it cheaper, you know, in the meantime.
Well, they also have, I'm sure this also plays a part into that whole national registry of behavior,
right?
Behavior that that they have, where you score points on your behavior, and that helps you in society. And if you don't do well, then you don't get a mortgage, and you don't get into the good schools and stuff like that, because it's like basically a social credit rating.
Yeah. And furthermore, if I'm remembering right in that article, it also mentioned that they have an automated system that can do this. And what they're doing is they're essentially passively tracking at where people go. When people go further than their normal route, so if they go between home and work, home and work, home and work, and then one day they go between home and somewhere else, it flags them because
wow.
It's in a part of the country that has a high number of, I believe the article specifically called out, high number of Muslims. And apparently Islamophobia is big even in China, which I did not know.
Shikes.
So yeah, I think Brendan, we've talked about this with a number of the other kind of technologies that were like deemed for law enforcement. And I think in the from the I'm pro law enforcement point of view, that makes sense, but from the like basic human freedom kind of point of view, it really does not.
And I think that's a flaw in the law enforcement is always right point of view.
Yeah.
Is humans are corruptible and institutions of power are corruptible and are corrupt in many instances. And just because, you know, a piece of paper says that this is the right thing to do does not mean it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. And furthermore, it doesn't even have to be the people in those institutions that are necessarily bad actors. The fact that that is data that will live somewhere. I mean, the last I checked, you know, hard drive prices and storage prices have not gone up. And so it just stands to reason that this data will not necessarily just be overwritten at the end of every day. You know, you can establish a lot of information based on metadata and where a person goes and what they're doing without even knowing who that person is. I mean, I think we've talked about that on the show too, like how our phones track where we are, and you can look at the phone and look at essentially most visited places. You know, it tracks that. It tracks the places you've been and will say like, oh, you're here a lot. I wonder if we should give you suggestions based on that. And it immediately, at least to me, is like, I don't get the, wow, that's so convenient, thanks. I get the, my God, why are you tracking me everywhere? I want to turn that off right now.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think, you know, surfacing that data in glasses is not the problem. I think that's a symptom of the problem, but it's not necessarily the problem. That being said, I'm sort of surprised that the facial recognition works that well.
Does it though? Does it though? That's my thought when I read this and heard about this. Is like, I don't know if it really works that well. I don't have the iPhone 10, so I don't know how the most consumer faced version of this works.
Yeah. Yeah, that is really, really interesting to know how much that works or doesn't work and what you can or couldn't do to necessarily subvert it, right? You have to just always draw another eye on your forehead or something, in which case it would confuse the hell out of any facial recognition algorithm. But the problem is then you have another eye on your forehead and everyone will freak out. But
It would confuse the hell out of me.
Yeah, I think it has some potential. I do remember reading a thing that was a way to like mess up image recognition systems, which is essentially putting like certain geometric shapes that that confuse what an edge looks like or what a key thing, because all of the, you know, recognition kind of software is looking for like the common features of a face. So like eyes and mouth, all right, that's a face. And then it refines it based on that. So if you can subvert what the basic level of what a face looks like is, it will mess up the software because you can't even get past level one of recognizing that a face is there. So I think we're going to see a lot more fashion fashion masks. I think that's going to be a thing. I've already seen them in airports. I've already seen them because it's like those masks that people wear when they're sick to, you know, not spread the disease, which some people think works the other way, in which case if I wear it, I'm not going to get sick. It actually doesn't work that way. But that's beside the point. I've seen people wearing them with designs on them. So they're clearly meant to be, you know, like more fashionable than just the regular white mask.
And they do still need to work on that facial recognition technology. I was just reading another article earlier talking about how the error rate in facial recognition is much higher in anyone who's not a white male.
Yeah, right.
Like that's not an intentional thing. It's just the bias of the systems.
Well, it's because the people training these systems are probably white males. Right. Just saying.
I think you're going out on a limb there. I think that's a very risky guess. Okay. Very, very risky guess.
All right. I might be. I might be, but maybe that's a topic for another show.
I also just, on an unrelated note, posted a story on Facebook about how people who are good at sarcasm are also good at everything else. Just as a general informational point there.
That's a thing.
Of course you did.
That's a thing.
There you go.
But for the glasses, if we can stick with that for just another moment, does it, I mean, you must have to wear like hardware. There must be like a laptop that you're carrying around in a backpack or something. I feel like we haven't miniaturized computing technology to that level yet, or maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
How did the Google Glass work? Was there like one of those handsome engineer belt side thingies? Like
no. A little No, pocket? it was completely the glass. I mean, if you can imagine a frame of like the earpieces, yeah. One of them was maybe like quadruple size. Like it was double thick and double the height because that's where the battery and the computing piece were. And and it was very, very limited in the amount of stuff that it could do. I'm assuming that for this to be able to do that live, it's either uploading this constantly to something that is doing the recognition, or you're carrying something that's doing that recognition. Although, honestly, I guess it has been quite a few years. I don't know how miniature technology can get anymore.
No, but I mean, just thinking about what an Apple, thinking about what my Apple Watch can do,
yeah,
is quite a lot. And if they can control. If they can control these glasses from the Apple Watch and just create a two-way connection to a database.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it doesn't need that much computing power on board.
But it can't be done in real time. So it'll still be like, excuse me, can you hold up for a second? I am checking your face with the database. No, it's nothing. It's nothing. I just want you to, I am the police. Please wait.
Yeah. Nothing to be alarmed about. Nothing.
Wait, no, this is fine, really. And in the background, you hear that.
Yeah.
Uploading
modem sound. The 1980s modem noise, yes.
Yes. Wonderful.
I'm sure it sounds just like that, yes.
It's not a thing to me.
Well, moving on to something that is a thing. It's the Winter Olympics now. It has been, I guess, for the last four days now, something like that, in Korea and
Norway's winning.
Sorry.
Norway's winning as always. I was going to say I'm happy that I'm not in Norway right now because this time of every 4 years is the worst time to be in Norway because Norwegians. They just get so full of themselves and are the best in the world at being themselves. And ironically, I'm going to Norway on Saturday, so I'm not happy about that. But so what I wanted to talk about was not how awesome Norwegians are at skiing, but the New York Times had an excellent story today about one of the seminal moments in modern Norwegian history. which, you know, how in the US you have these moments like, where were you for the older generations? Is like, where were you when Kennedy was shot or when they walked on the moon? For us, I think it's more, where were you on 9/11? Moments like that. And in every country has their kind of like moments like that, like when Diana died or la-di-das. But in Norway, the one that most people use is, where were you when Oddvar Brå broke his skiing pole? And I shit you not, like every Norwegian over the age of 40 will be able to tell you exactly where they were when they when they saw that race, because this is it's cross country skiing. It's the World Championships in 1982, and it's in Oslo, and it's the four by 10 kilometers cross country relay. And on the final leg of it, it's a Russian guy whose name eludes me at the moment, Alexander Savialov, is going up against the Norwegian. And these were, I think, the Swedes sometimes competed, but mostly it was Norway and Russia, or the Soviet Union back then, were competing for the relays in the men's cross country. And so in this race, it's the two of them coming up into the final lap. And as one of them crosses the other or passes the other, the Norwegian accidentally gets his pole stuck between the knees of the Russian or Soviet guy. And so the pole breaks. The Soviet guy is forced to his knees. And the Norwegian runs off with a pole and a half, which you can imagine really screws up your rhythm. And so every Norwegian will have, when you talk about this, you can see it visually for your eyeballs. This guy stumbling along, the crowd going nuts. A poor guy on his feet running after him with a spare pole, and the commentator yelling, "Give the man a pole! Give that man a pole! Anyone!" and so he gets the pole, and he skis on, and he gets first place. Stuff of legends, of course. But the incredible thing, which no one in Norway will tell you about, is that the Soviet guy, Savialov, actually gets to his feet and catches up with him, and they actually cross the finish line at the same time. And it took a photo finish to figure out that they were actually completely equal across the goal line. So they were awarded a shared gold. But no one in Norway will talk about that part, because it's much more legendary and fantastic. And everyone remembers where they were when it happened. To talk about, where were you when Oddvar Brå broke his skiing pole? And the New York Times article, it's really fascinating because it dives into this from both angles. And it actually has an interview with the Soviet guy as well, and talks about how he remembers everything completely differently. It wasn't Oddvar Brå who caught up with him. It was he who caught up with Oddvar Brå and the tangled and, you know, and... But anyhow, it's a really fascinating story of sports and the moments that people remember.
Oh, certainly more interesting than like the like hours, it seems like, of commentary that I've had to endure just to watch some of the the Olympics in the last 3 days. Have you been watching any of the coverage? Have either of you been?
I have not. I don't know if they resend it during the day, but
yeah, they do.
I find that I'm just not up and watching TV at the times when it's happening.
I've seen a little bit. I did get to see what I think might be my favorite winter Olympic sport, which is the short track speed skating relay.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
The crash a minute.
Yeah. It's like the intensity of motor racing, except it doesn't, like, if you're watching NASCAR and they do 500 laps, it's over way faster.
Yeah.
Like, cutting out all the boring parts where they were just driving. Like, it's such a short race that there's no time to hang around. Like, they're constantly making moves and people are crashing and coming back.
It's only crashing. But
it's hilarious.
No, I think.
But I did see that.
You're right. Yeah. Go ahead.
I did see that Norway won a gold today in ladies ski jumping, which I remember has been fought for hard by the ladies for many years to get that recognized. I think it was basically something that the Norwegian Olympic Committee pushed for because it was, I think there were only mainly Norwegian women doing it. And so they just...
they want to pad their medal stats?
Yeah, so they just realized that, guys, if we can make this like a valid, proper exercise, or you know, then we can get just another gold medal. And now they did it, and lo and behold, they won the gold medal.
At the same time, though, there really is no reason for there not to be the same events for men and women.
None at all. None at all.
That's should just be a thing.
Yeah.
That should be a thing. Hands down.
Also, I don't understand ski jumping. Like, how do you learn to do that without just dying?
I don't know either. I do not know.
It seems like something that would be really fun when you finally have it down, but like the learning curve has to be so steep.
Yeah.
You start on a very, very small jump, and then you go up and up and up once you master the sizes, because there's like a million different sizes. So you don't go out on the Olympic ones on day one.
I don't think there's any sized one. Like, people jump off houses and break their legs. Like, it's not...
True. Yeah, I've gone down the bottom hill at the Holmenkollen, the big ski jump in Oslo, and I don't think I would want to do that again. Just, like, ski down the bottom one, because that one is steep as hell.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I have been slogging through what coverage I can get, because I recently... and I'm kind of surprised we didn't talk about this on the show, but like about a month and a half ago, I finally joined the cord cutters and turned off my satellite service. And so the big outcome from that is that I can't watch live sports anymore. So I ended up getting an antenna just so I could watch NBC, which is the only thing that's showing the coverage that I can get for free right now. And it comes in fine, which is great, but it's still NBC. So the standard far too much talking, far too many athlete profiles, and
Katie Couric telling you that the Netherlands, the Holland people, the Dutch as they're called, they actually use skates to get to work in the morning.
The fun facts are wonderful.
It's amazing the amount of information that we learn during the Olympics that we will forget within 2 weeks.
Yes.
And then not even think about for another 4 years.
Right.
But I would love to hear more about the cord cutting, but maybe that's for next episode.
Yeah.
But that should definitely be a thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm compiling stuff kind of as we go, and I think that would make for a good kind of show topic. I'll hold on to that.
Get some more data for us.
But so kind of moving in a more entertainment direction, we're going to talk about a movie that I don't think is it out yet? Did it just come
it
out?
Has to
the,
be.
It is out. I almost went to see it this weekend before I saw this headline. but the headline I'm talking about is Sony apologizes as Peter Rabbit movie makes parents hopping mad, which. I also think, just as a copywriter, I think it's a genius headline. So my son is 8 years old, and this weekend we were thinking about going to the movies, and so I thought of taking him to see the Peter Rabbit movie, but we didn't get that far. But then this headline, when I read it, I thought, oh, it's that bad, because it's based on Peter Rabbit and those tales by Beatrix Potter, which is kind of old school classic storytelling with animals in the main characters and roles. And they're really great. And we've read them in our family for several generations and we love them. So I thought it was like, oh, Sony screwed up and made a really piss poor movie. But no, it's not about that. It is about that. It's a scene in the movie where the rabbits have to try to get past a human being. And so they, if I understand this correctly, they throw a blackberry into the human being's mouth, and he suffers an anaphylaxis, allergic shock, and he is forced to use an adrenaline injector on himself.
Oh my God.
And what the parents are losing it over is that this makes fun of food allergy reactions, which is bad messaging to send to children. Now, I think this is just terrible movie making, because I don't think Beatrix Potter wrote that.
I'm pretty sure that was not in the original books.
Not in the original books. And having just recently read the three first Narnia books and watched the movies made of those, and seen how much liberties they had to take with those to
yikes.
Update and make them like modern with romance and fighting and everything. I shudder now to think what they did to this one. But to see that what the parents are, they've now started a petition for an apology from Sony Pictures, and allergy awareness organizations are boycotting the children's film, calling it socially irresponsible depiction in a movie aimed at children. Now, I haven't seen the movie, as I said, and I haven't seen the scene, but I just, when I saw this, I was like, all right, people. Yes, it's terrible movie making, but dude, is it really like, is that what we're going to get upset about now? Are we upset about everything?
Yes, we are. This is the world that we live in. Outrage is so in.
Yes.
Outrage is so in.
Which, the thing about it that bothers me is there are legitimate things that people should be outraged about today.
Yes.
And things
I can name a couple.
Actually deserve trigger warnings.
Yes.
But that everybody needs to be warned about everything before they get into it, because they don't want to be in a situation that makes them uncomfortable for every single thing is absurd.
I'm going to quote you and say, let's not go down that rabbit hole. And... Yeah, I completely agree. There are so many things in this world to be actually outraged about. And I'm shortly before we, because this is not typical only for America. It's a problem in Norway as well. Shortly before we moved away from Norway, this 17-year-old kid had written an op-ed in one of the biggest newspapers in Norway. And he said, and this might not translate even, but he said, thin skin is the new infectious disease in Norway. It's like the new most popular disease in Norway. And,
sure.
he wrote it really well and put it really well. And this whole thing about...
And like then people write in to a comment saying they were offended by it. Let me just
exactly. And this whole thing of looking for things to be offended and shocked by, it's just, oh man, it drives me nuts.
Especially in regards to something like this, which I will, you can't see my air quotes, but I'm calling it art. I mean, it is a creative endeavor.
Yep.
You shouldn't have to cater to the lowest common denominator in every situation. Otherwise, you will not have good art.
Right.
And that.
I mean, this probably isn't good art for other reasons.
I mean, for most. I would even say for most.
Yeah. But that's not... That's not where we... a place we want to go. That's not...
I just want to... Before any of us goes to see this movie, and I'm pretty sure you won't, let's have a bet on whether there is a modern pop song with bunnies dancing to it at the end of it.
That's no bet. Come on. That was like...
Would you be surprised?
No.
How offended do you have to be to ask for an apology from a movie production company for a movie you haven't seen yet?
Like, I'm sure they saw it.
Because this exists.
Yeah.
Yes, probably.
Well, it's a lot easier to read the headline than it is to read the article, as we've noticed in the past when researching topics for the show sometimes.
Absolutely.
People are getting an apology from Sony for making this movie. I want an apology from Luc Besson for making Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. I was outraged at that movie.
I share your outrage, and I haven't even seen that movie.
And I will keep throwing that movie under the bus.
Nice, nice. Well, I don't think there's a high likelihood of me seeing Peter Rabbit. It's possible, I guess. I mean, now that I have MoviePass, I have extra time. I guess I could just burn one of the days and go see it. But instead, earlier last week, I burned a MoviePass to go see The Greatest Showman, which is a musical. It's been out for a little while. In fact, I guess it was technically out last year because some of its music is in Oscar contention for 2017.
Is this by the guy who made La La Land?
So the two composers of the songs from this are from the songwriters from La La Land. Or they helped with some of that, but it isn't the same director or writer.
It's not Damien Chazelle.
Right, right.
I thought it was a Baz Luhrmann movie, and apparently it's not.
No, so interestingly enough, I wasn't sure of the pedigree of this movie, like where people are coming from, what is the thing. The only thing that I knew from it was that Hugh Jackman is in it, and not everybody knows this, because I think everybody associates Hugh Jackman with Wolverine right away, but Hugh Jackman has a musical theater career, and he was in that terrible adaptation of Les Mis that came out a little while ago, and I have a whole rant that I will spare you about for that, but he's done musicals in the past. He was in a production of Oklahoma that was shown on PBS as part of Great Performances, which was, in my opinion, very good. I mean, he can sing, he can dance, and he can act. So he's that, that thing that like has not existed in quite a while in TV and movie entertainment. He, in my opinion, for the movie, brought the most chops to the movie, because in looking at the credits kind of towards the end, he was one of the few people that actually sang all of the songs that he was in. It wasn't someone else kind of overdubbing, et cetera, et cetera. As a movie, it's not great. It's it's very light. It's super duper light. It's very like, what's the word? Very, very safe. And bland, honestly. The spectacle from it kind of does echo a Baz Luhrmann movie. Like, it immediately conjures Moulin Rouge for me in my head. But Moulin Rouge, all of its songs were covers. Well, I think there was one original song, but all of the songs in it were covers. So it has kind of a history of, oh, I know this song from this context, and now I'm applying it with all of this spectacle going on. With The Greatest Showman, all of the songs are new, so they have no context. Furthermore, all of the songs have a kind of anthem, American Idol, pop belting quality to all of them. All of the songs, even the quiet songs, turn into a like rousing, you're not singing along kind of thing, because you're just kind of wailing over the notes. And for me, from a person that enjoys musicals, it makes it hard to watch, because even if I knew the songs, I couldn't sing along to them, because it's not singing after a certain point. You're just kind of on top of the notes, which I think is impressive from a vocal point of view if that person is singing. But because they're not singing, because they're being dubbed, because of post-production, et cetera, et cetera, it's not impressive. It just ends up being kind of this messy assault to the senses, and that's what I took away from it. So maybe don't spend your MoviePass dollars on that one.
And there was a song nominated for Best Song for the Oscars, correct?
That's right.
Is it a good song?
So in the context of the film, the name of the song is This Is Me, and it's sung by the character that plays the bearded lady in the because P.T. Barnum's that's who Hugh Jackman's portraying. It's P.T. Barnum. So in P.T. Barnum's kind of cavalcade of curiosities and all of the things, one of the things was he had a bearded lady. It was a woman that actually had a beard, and they kind of turn her into the leader of the freaks of the show, of the sideshows and everything else that is built into the movie. And it's sort of a powerful point in the movie, except they say no more about any of the characters. There's no delving at all into the essentially the building blocks of P.T. Barnum's show and kind of the letting your freak flag fly aspect of it. It's like, that's the song. And now that we've done it, we're going to ignore it for the rest of the movie. And it's going to be about other things. So it's sort of unfortunate in that it's like it's checking a box. It's not really a driving force behind the movie like it really could have been. It's also just not a great song for the same reasons as I was saying. It's like it's a song that you can't sing along to. And so when you're hearing it, it is very. The only way I can describe it is it's an anthem, and I am sick of those now. I just can't. You can't. Do you know what I mean?
Like, is P.T. Barnum portrayed as a good guy in the movie?
I think it's conflicted, but ultimately good. Like, there are a couple points where he's definitely taking advantage of people, and that shows. And there are a couple points where he's, like, being a bad dad, and that shows. But overall, he's very, very much the hero, and there's no point where you're really rooting against him.
That's interesting, because on the latest season of DC's Legends of Tomorrow, one of the many CW superhero shows, they had the Legends of Tomorrow travel through time and fix time anachronisms and fight bad guys. But then an episode where they go back in time and meet P.T. Barnum, and he's a bad guy, and he was played by Billy Zane. And it was terrible, but in the best way.
Oh, Billy Zane, the bad guy from Titanic. Not that the iceberg wasn't enough of a bad guy. We actually had a person that was a focus of evil in the movie.
He will always be the Phantom to me.
That's a better call, in my opinion. Yes.
He hasn't done much lately, though, has he?
No. Nothing that's gotten a major studio release.
No.
He was in something. I can't remember what it was, but I saw him like 2 years ago playing himself in something that got a lot of kicks.
He was in Zoolander as himself.
That's what it was. It was in Zoolander 2. I saw it. Yes, I did. I did see it.
I also saw it. It was not great.
Though at the same time, not as bad as I feared.
That's true.
Which tells you something. Tells you something about my expectations.
Well, awesome. Gentlemen, we've had a wonderful show. We will pick another one up in a couple weeks. If you would like to join us for the Not a Thing podcast, we're still looking for ideas. Feel free to contribute to the show. Throw a thing at us or a not thing. Tweet at us. Facebook us. If you would like to be on the show, we're still looking for guests. Guests are definitely a thing. Please find us via the normal means. And you can always look up the show notes at notathingpodcast.com. We're going to post all sorts of show notes about the stuff that we've talked about today. And I will talk to you folks in a couple of weeks.
Awesome sauce. Gentlemen.